जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी गोपी जन बल्लभ गिरि वन द्वारे यशुरनन्दन व्रज जनरञ्जन यशुरनन्दन व्रज जनरञ्जन यमुना तेरा बनचारे जमुना तेरा बनचारी जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी गोपी जन बल्लभ गिरि वन द्वारे यशुरनन्दन व्रज जनरञ्जन जमुना तेरा बनचारी जय प्रभुपद जय प्रभुपद जय प्रभुपद जय प्रभुपद जय गिरि गोवर्धन जय गिरि गोवर्धन जय गिरि गोवर्धन जय गिरि गोवर्धन जय राधे श्याम राधे श्याम राधे श्याम जय राधे श्याम
Jai Nitya Lila Pravista Asta Tarasata Sri Simanas Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai Prems Kaho Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nitananda Sri Advaita Sri Radha Srivasiti Gaudu Vartipanda Ki Jai Sri Sri Radha Shyam Sunda Gopa Gopinath Shyama Kundarada Kundi Gita Govardhan Ki Jai Grantharaj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai Gaudu Premanandi All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the lotus seed of Sri Sri Guru and Gauranga. We need one more and then we get the four Kumaras. coming. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Reading today from Srimad Bhagavatam, 3rd Canto, Chapter 13, Text Number 9. Brahmovacha Pritastubhyamaham Tata. Svasti stad kam chitik svara yam nevyali kena hrida sadhi metyat manarpitam brahmovacha pritastubhyam maham tatta Svasti stad kam titik sharva yan nirvyali kena hridam Sadhimetyatmanarpitam. Brahmovacha. Pritastubhyam maham tatta. Swasti statkam tiriksharva. Yannivyali kenahridam. Sadhimetyatmanarpitam. Please chant. Nobody else? Brahma vacha. Brahma said, Prita, pleased, tubhyam, unto you, aham, I, tata, my dear son, swasti, all blessings, stat, let there be, vam, unto you, both, shitti ishvara, O Lord of the world, yet, because, nirvyalikena, without reservation, rida, by the heart, sadhi, give instructions, ma, unto me, iti, thus, atmanam, by self, arpitam, surrendered. Translation. Lord Brahma said, my dear son, O Lord of the world, I am very pleased with you, and I desire all blessings for both you and your wife. You have without reservation surrendered yourself unto me with your heart for my instructions. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. The relationship between the father and the son is always sublime. The father is naturally disposed with goodwill towards the son, and he is always ready to help the son in his progress in life. But in spite of the father's goodwill, the son is sometimes misguided because of his misuse of personal independence. Every living entity, however small or big they may be, has the choice of independence. If the son is unreservedly willing to be guided by the father is 10 times more eager to instruct and guide him by all means. The father and son relationship, as exhibited here in the dealings of Brahma and Manu, is excellent. Both the father and the son are well qualified, and their example should be followed by all humankind. Manu, the son, unreservedly asked the father, Brahma, to instruct him. And the father, who was full of Vedic wisdom, was very glad to instruct. The example of the father of mankind may be rigidly followed by mankind, and that will advance the cause of the relationship of fathers and sons. Om Agyana Tamarandasya Jananjana Shalakaya Chaksu Unmalitam Yunatasmai Sri Guruve Namaha Mukam Karoti Vachanam Pangumlam Jayate Girim Yakripa Tamaham Bande Sri Gurum Dini Tarino Vanchakaputudibhischa Kripa Sindhu Bahebacha Patitanam Pavanevyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jaya Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Sri Gadadhara Srivasiti Gaura Bhaktivinoda Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. My only constant companion, my only friend, my guru, my wealth, that which has delivered me, my great fortune, and the source of my good luck, the form through which I taste pleasure, my obeisances to you, O Srimad Bhagavatam. I offer my respectful obeisances to you, O Srimad Bhagavatam. By your recitation, one attains transcendental bliss because your syllables shower pure love of God. You are to be served by everyone always, for you are an incarnation of Lord Krishna. These two particular verses from Sanatana Goswami's Krishna Lilamrita are significant before Bhagavatam class because they acknowledge the Srimad Bhagavatam as a personality. In our tradition, we understand everything is personal. The idea of things being impersonal isn't part of our line of following. And so we should understand the Bhagavatam is a personality. And by serving the Bhagavatam, by taking shelter of the Bhagavatam, by reciting and hearing the Bhagavatam, all good fortune comes to us. This is why Srila Prabhupada so emphatically arranged for this Bhagavatam class every morning in all of our centers. We see in Prabhupada's own life, wherever he traveled, he would always give the Bhagavatam class in the morning. Bhagavatam, Chaitanya Charitamrita, mostly Bhagavatam, but Chaitanya Charitamrita also, same thing. Excuse me. So this is the necessity of understanding this relationship we have with the Srimad Bhagavatam, as all of these different topics are presented to us. So here, in this chapter, we're seeing a different aspect of Lord Brahma than we did in the last chapter. The mode of passion, as we discussed, as a necessity for Lord Brahma's creative energy, this has been a bit quelled. It's become a little subdued. And the relationship in this particular chapter is based on Lord Brahma being Vedagarbha. Vedagarbha is noted in verse number 6, the source, the emanation, garbha meaning the womb, coming from Veda, all knowledge. So Brahma is the source from which all knowledge comes in pertaining to the Vedic wisdom. Therefore, Vedagarbha, that place which everything is emanating like that. Now, fathers and sons, they come in all different stripes, we can say. Sometimes, you know, the devotees that take to Krishna consciousness are accused, or I should say previously, not so much now, but were accused of being against family, not encouraging family relationships and all. And it is true in some of our temples in our younger years, this family tie was cut. I've mentioned several times how I was quite fortunate the temple I grew up in. On Father's Day and Mother's Day, all the brahmacharis were lined up at the phone and we called home to wish our mothers and fathers a happy Mother's or Father's Day accordingly. It was a rarity, I understood. I thought at the time, well, this is what everybody does. But I came to learn that, no, this wasn't what everybody does. I was just very fortunate and blessed to have a broad-minded, common-sense temple president, you could say. Excuse me. So, this relationship between the fathers and son, Prabhupada points out here that it is significant. This whole purport is, you know, in stressing this. And he mentions here that if we follow this example being given here in the Bhagavatam in this chapter 13 between Brahma and Manu, that this will benefit all of mankind. We see that the modern-day relationships between family members can be very tense, very difficult, very strained, even in the best of times. Either strained by the fact that there's great distance between where they're all residing, or strained by the fact that the offspring, daughter or son, either way, stray from the shelter, guidance, and path lined out by the parents, or, you know, so many different factors enter into it. So these different aspects can be seen in the father and son relationship. Here, even in Brahma's own lineage, we see a difference in compliance by his different offspring. Of course, when Brahma asked the four Kumaras, Sanatana, Sanandana, Samat Kumara, and Sanaka, to create progeny, this was, you know, his responsibility. Brahma knew, I'm not going to populate the entire universe, you know, so have these children and then have them assist in the matter. This is my service to the Lord. This will be their service to me, thus their service to the Lord. And the four Kumaras very politely declined. And this, of course, refusal of them was glorified in the Puranas, in the Bhagavatam itself, but nonetheless, it angered Brahma. He's the father. You're my son. Please do this. No, I don't think so. Generally, that's not the response that we look for in our relationship with children. You know, but we do hear that quite often. Generally, we hear that when they're, what is that, terrible twos or the terrible twos and the horrific threes or whatever it is, you know. No, I'm not doing. No, I refuse, you know. And then again, we hear it more prominently as a teenager, you know. So these types of refusals go along with parenting. And so, but Brahma was quite disturbed by it because Brahma was focused. I have this service to the Lord. He's created me. He's my creator. And he's created me for the purpose of populating the universe, which I can't do alone. I mean, probably could, but get a little worn out, I'm quite sure. So, you know, let me have children and they'll assist in the matter. So when the four Kumaras declined, Brahma became very upset. But the fact that the four Kumaras declined for the principle of renunciation, for the principle of staying focused in service, is actually glorified. So there is some variety in the relationships between fathers and sons. But here, we see that Manu and his wife, Shatarupa, they're completely compliant in their mood of service to Brahma. This is a very nice mutual service, we can say, between Manu and his wife in serving the direction of Brahma. Now, in these last couple of purports, Srila Prabhupada has spoken about the proper activity of a son. Now, this goes along with the mood noted in verse number 4 about hearing from and serving those who are pure devotees. This verse number 4 glorifies this entire process that we're taking part in daily, that this hearing from a pure devotee and taking the instructions from a pure devotee, embracing those instructions, becoming purified by those instructions. And this is truthfully the real foundation, the real sum and substance of our devotional path, service. Service must be executed. By nature, we have a tendency to serve others. You know, sometimes that is put to the side, or sometimes we make an effort to ignore it, but the reality is that we have a nature to serve others, you know? You see the little boys here, you know, they're happy to dance together. One of them comes up and gets flowers and brings and shares with their brothers. My granddaughter just got a certificate in school, Revati Myler, for always being kind and helpful to other children. So this is a nature that they have. The opposite of that comes from, as Prabhupada says here, misguided independence. So that mood of Manu, the proper mood of Manu, it's expressed here, especially in verse number 7. Manu says to Brahma, order us how to serve you. So this is the mood coming before the spiritual master. Tad vidhi pranipatena, pranipatena shevaya, upadakshanti te genam gyaninas tattva darshina. How can I serve you? Service has to be there. We're serving anyway. Serving our senses, serving our family, serving our boss, serving society, whatever, we're serving. You can't get away from it. This is the whole success formula for any business in the modern world, in any circumstance. Service to the customer. The customer is always right until the customer is not right, and then they're a real aggravation. Those of us in retail can attest to that. But the reality is that we have that service mood, and this is embraced as something that is beneficial. So when Manu says like this, my dear Brahma, order us how to serve you. Now, there's a significant word in that statement that is us. Manu is there before his father with his wife by his side. So the us used here in the plural sense indicates husband and wife serving together. Now, Srila Prabhupada often referred to this, and in a community like here in Alachua, where we are 99.99999% Grihasthas with family and children. I think there's one or two brahmacharis. You have some brahmacharis, you know, one or two, you know, so we get a 0.05%. But this is the basis of society. So Prabhupada often referred to the combination of husband and wife as a benefit. Be an ideal couple of husband and wife in your country. Be Krishna conscious by full cooperation of husband and wife together, and be happy, both of you, in this life and the next life also. This is a letter as early as 1967. Again, Prabhupada says, the husband and wife must live together for helping one another in developing Krishna consciousness. This is a letter from 1968. Same theme is running. So if you go to London to join Mukunda and his company, you will be very much pleased to see how husband and wife combined together can so nicely preach this Krishna consciousness movement. Letter from 1969. Married life in Krishna consciousness is the perfection of married life, because the basic principle is that the wife will help the husband so that he may pursue Krishna consciousness, and similarly, the husband will help the wife to advance in Krishna consciousness. So in this way, both husband and wife become happy and their lives are sublime. This is a letter from 1969 as well. You both, husband and wife, combined together, work for your mutual advancement in Krishna consciousness. That is my desire. This is a letter from 1970. So anyway, there are numerous letters in which this mood, this theme is there by Srila Prabhupada about the joint service together of husband and wife. One could question, well, Prabhupada was a sannyasi. What's his concern with all this husband and wife stuff? Because Prabhupada could see his disciples were not of that caliber of mostly being renunciates. They needed to be married. When Prabhupada came to America, this observation he made was all the boys and girls living together very haphazardly and having their relationships, and also, no, you get married and properly serve as husband and wife. You know, now, while he certainly did preach the necessity, the importance of renunciation, he also was practical in understanding that it wasn't for everyone. I mentioned this the last class I spoke. You know, the Prabhupada said every man should stay a brahmachari and every woman should get married. So what to do? And then Prabhupada chuckles. You know, so this idea that family life is going to be there was understood. Prabhupada mentions that that first year he was in America, he walked the streets of New York observing everything to understand what should my preaching method be. How will I spread Krishna consciousness amongst these people? It's not going to be like in the villages in India. So how will I do this? So one thing he observed, of course, was that the boys and girls should be married, and they can work together in Krishna consciousness. You know, and all of these letters that I read from here, the same principle, mutual cooperation together so that you both advance in Krishna consciousness. There's nothing there about exploitation or one better than the other, working together mutually to advance in Krishna consciousness. So the numerous letters, as I say, from Prabhupada on the subject all the way through, you know. So this cooperative mood that we see by Manu and Shatarupa is certainly appreciated by Brahma. You know, any parent is going to be very, very happy when they see that their children are settled nicely in their life and in their Krishna consciousness, and that they're doing what they can to help. You know, as I say, Brahma has this huge job to create progeny from the universe. It's no small feat. You know, sometimes we take up a service and it's just like, oh, I had no idea this was involved. I recently had an opportunity presented to me at work where I could take up a different position than what I have now. And I thought about it, and externally I thought, oh, this would be pretty good. A little bump in salary, you know, less time on the sales floor, da-da-da-da-da. But then I got to talking with a couple of my associates about what's in that position that I wasn't aware of. Da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. Oh, okay, I think I'll just stay where I'm at. So, you know, sometimes we look at a service and it is a huge responsibility. So this was what Brahma had before him. So he needed the assistance of cooperative sons, cooperative daughters, cooperative families to help with this service. Now, sometimes husband and wife, they're unable to have any children, and this often produces anxiety and distress. You know, because this means there's no one to help with the family business, no one to carry things on. I've observed this in many different situations, you know, and we see this, especially in Brahma's situation, you know, this major responsibility for the entire universe. I mean, we think we have some responsibility to maintain our home, you know, make sure the mortgage and the car payments get paid and the children's education is taken care of and da-da-da, and to make sure they're raised nicely in Krishna consciousness, make sure there's facility, you know, for being able to put food on the table in our house, you know, all these basic things. But imagine the monumental responsibility that Lord Brahma has here. So to have a son step forward in a very subservient and assistive mood to help with his father's service, this is a big relief. Now, regarding the relationship between the father and the son, there are indications in this particular purport that that relationship can go either way. And we've all seen that, you know. Cooperation or antagonism. You know, either way, the relationship can be manifested. The spiritual being coming to this world has made a conscious decision to leave the shelter of Krishna, and in so doing, to therefore seek the shelter of Maya. Now, as foolish as this may seem, you know, we're looking at the broader picture. We think, no, that's not a good choice. We can see that, you know, but we've made that choice ourselves as well. So, you know, this separation like that, this is the independent nature of the living entity. We have that freedom. I was listening to a lecture in the car with my wife yesterday, and Prabhupada says, we're not mandating everyone has to stay here. Sometimes, you know, we have to chastise someone and tell them, you have to go. You cannot live here anymore. No, 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 I can't leave, I can't leave, I can't leave. Prabhupada says, and sometimes even if they leave, then they come back. So, you know, this independent nature gives us the freedom to go this way or that way. And this is what Prabhupada's talking about here. The independent nature of the son is sometimes misguided by animosity, by bad association, or by both. This is why we're so attentive as parents as to the association our children keep. This is why we give them a very strong foundation at home, a very protective circumstance, so that when they do go out into the secular world where they have to mix with non-devotees, that they do not become misguided, that they do not become misdirected, that they don't take up bad association, develop bad habits. By bad association, bad habits come about. By bad habits, fall down is the result. So this type of concern can cause great distress, great frustration for a father. And as Prabhupada mentions here, the father is naturally disposed with goodwill towards the son. That's the natural state of affairs. The father wants what's best for the son. He wants to see him succeed. He wants to see him do better than himself. My father started his own business and quite successful. And each of the sons took a period of time serving in that business. But it was my youngest brother who really pushed the business forward and just expanded it significantly, very, very greatly. This was very pleasing. My father was still alive while he was taking over the company, my youngest brother. And my father was very happy with this. You know, he was able to go in, just kind of piddle around. He had his little workshop where he would do his inventions and this, that, and the other. And, you know, didn't have the responsibility of managing the business. My son was doing it. My brother was doing it and expanding it so nicely. My father was very happy by that. There's not a mood of enviousness. There's not a mood of wanting to thwart that effort. The father is naturally disposed with goodwill toward the son. This is the way things are arranged. And the son, in like, has the responsibility to serve and assist the father. This is mentioned in this particular purport, that this is the excellent father and son relationship. In Krishna consciousness, we always want the excellent manifestation of what's going on. Excellent dressing of the deities. Mother Brunti has a style that's very unique. I refer to it as old school. Very clean lines, everything placed very distinctly. You know, that style of dressing is very excellent, you know. Managing this community. I mean, we look at what Mother Mukhi's done in the last 16 or 17 years. I forget how long it's been. You know, excellent service. You know, when we have a wonderful feast, we think, oh, the excellent service of these cooks. You know, we want the best feast, you know. Oh, so wonderful. So in this way, you know, this type of excellence is what we seek. So this relationship being described in this section of the Bhagavatam, particularly in this chapter, Prabhupada says it's the excellent relationship between father and son. Now, in Chanakya Pandit's Niti Shastra, he states several points about sons. Srila Prabhupada, of course, would often quote from Chanakya Pandit. And while it may be true that some of the statements from Niti Shastra may not be fully applicable in our modern age, others fit quite well, and we can see that. So Chanakya Pandit says, he whose son is obedient to him has his heaven here on earth. So everyone aspires to go to heaven. Go to heaven, go to the spiritual world, whatever word you want to use in that regards, but to get that abode. And so for a father whose son is obedient to him, that heaven is manifested here. They alone are sons who are actually devoted to their father. He alone is a father who actually supports his sons. Here again, that excellent mutual relationship is referred to. Wise men should always bring up their sons in various moral instructions. For children who have knowledge of morality are well behaved and become a glory to the family. This is another thought that is persistent in families, is that the extensions of the family, the generational expansion of the family, should bring glory to the family. You know, as I mentioned with my father, it was very glorious to him that the youngest son has increased the business, you know. Srila Prabhupada was always so pleased when his disciples would increase the service, increase the book distribution, increase the opening of temples, increase the, you know, everything increasing. Prabhupada was always so pleased like that. You know, it brings glory to the line. Those parents who do not educate their sons are the enemies of their sons. Education is a necessity, is very important. We make every effort to train our children, you know. As a whole forest becomes fragrant by the existence of a single tree that has sweet-smelling blossoms on it, so an entire family becomes famous by the birth of a virtuous son. As a single withered tree, if set aflame, causes a whole forest to burn, so can a rascal son destroy an entire family. We've seen this in many different situations where one particular child can bring about the ruin of the entire family name. What is the use of having many sons if they cause grief and vexation? It is better to have only one son from whom the whole family can derive support and peacefulness. So not only bringing support financially, but support emotionally, and as a result, bringing a peaceful mood. This is the way we should execute our Krishna consciousness. Our Krishna consciousness shouldn't be executed always in anxiety and fear and distress, and you know, we may have a little anxiety to improve our service, but the general mood of our execution of life, of our Krishna consciousness, should be peaceful. Now, before anybody takes me to task for not mentioning daughters, remember, I have two glorious daughters, so I'm well aware of that. And Chanaka Pandit says many, many wonderful things about daughters, but that's not the subject matter we're looking at in this chapter or in these verses. This is specifically dealing with the relationship between fathers and sons. Now, it's noteworthy that Brahma addresses his son in glorious terms which remind him of his service. Shiti Ishvara, O Lord of the world. Now, if you're the Lord of the world, you get a lot of responsibilities. Ambarish Maharaj was the emperor of the entire world, and we see so many responsibilities there. You know, so much to be done. Bali, I mean, all these different personalities, you know. And this isn't just some empty praise by Brahma. You know, the father is inclined to say nice things about the son. Well, my son is so, you know, he's done so many things, you know, whether the son has actually done anything or not. But, you know, this is the responsibility that Manu has, and Brahma's encouraging and acknowledging it and, promoting it. But then he praises Manu after giving him this title, O Lord of the World. He praises him, Prititubhyam, all blessings to you. This is what we seek, the blessings of our seniors. You know, we always seek the blessings of the spiritual master. We seek the blessings of the more advanced devotees. We seek the blessings of those who are associates. You know, please bless us. Without your mercy, this is a repeated line in all the songs and poems of our acharyas. Without your mercy, I'm nothing. This was the very first song I learned when I was a young devotee. Gurudev Kripabindu Diya. Oh my Gurudev, without your mercy, I'm nothing. Please bless me. So Brahma's doing that. Prititubhyam, all blessings to you. Now this is a great blessing that you give to someone who's pleased you. You're not going to give all blessings to some nonsense, or as Chanakya Pandit says here, what does he say? A rascal son. You know, a rascal son that can bring about the entire... No, you're not giving blessings here. You're giving all blessings to you. You pleased me very much like this, you know? And it's naturally we can ask, well, what did Manu do to please Brahma? What was his function? What was his service? That's mentioned in this verse. Nirvyalikena arpitam. Surrendered without reservation. This is an important point. This is the necessity of our proper mentality when engaging in devotional service, when submitting ourselves to a spiritual master. We surrender without reservation. Now that's a very special type of surrender. It's a very special type of surrender. Nothing is held back. Many times in life or in novels or in movies, there's always mention of, well, what's the plan B? Or in other words, what's the backup plan in case this doesn't work out? Now that's indicative of in case it doesn't work out because it's just not possible to be successful, or in case it doesn't work out because I just can't keep following this, you know? Either way, what's my backup plan? What's the alternative to doing this? What's the alternative to surrender? So, you know, that you know, mood of, you know, I have to figure something out to take care of myself because this isn't going to be the thing that's going to answer all the questions, you know. In the process of devotional service, there's 9 different types of service. And one of those, the 9th, or we could say the culmination of all others, is Atma Nivedanam. Atma Nivedanam refers to that stage at which one has no other motivation than to serve the Lord and thus surrenders everything to the Lord. No other motivation than to serve the Lord and thus surrenders everything to the Lord. This is an ideal state of mind for us to have. And this is described here, Nirvyalikena Arpitam. That's what's being described. It's his complete surrender. Without reservation, arpitam, without reservation. So this is the mood that Manu has come before Brahma with, and it's very exemplary for us as we approach our devotional service, a mood of surrender. Now, we may, in our analytical, critical, fault-finding brain, we may find so many reasons not to surrender to this one, or this one. Minimally, at least, we have to surrender to our spiritual master. If we can surrender to our spiritual master, then we can extend that. And as Prabhupada says, work cooperatively. Here the husband and wife, Manu and Satyarupa, they're working cooperatively. They're both there together before the spiritual master. Let me serve you. Before their father, before their instructor, Lord Brahma. How can we serve you together? What can we do? So, this is that complete surrender. Now, this type of surrender, it brings about the full blessings, the full benedictions of reciprocation from the person we're surrendering to. Someone comes and renders service to you, you become very, very happy by that. You want to give something back to them. You don't just want to accept the service. Yes, that's right. I'll sit here and you just serve me all day. Yes, that's very good. Yeah. My laundry needs doing. My room needs cleaning. My feet need massaging. My meals need cooking. Yeah, you just do all of that. I'll just take all that. No. The mood is one reciprocates. Srila Prabhupada was always reciprocating with his disciples. And we see this in any serious advanced devotee. They're always reciprocating. Why? Because this is the mood of Atmani Vedanam. When we give that full surrender, along with that goes full protection, full shelter. And we have two very classic examples of this, of course, in the instance of Atmani Vedanam. That's Ambarish Maharaj and Bali Maharaj. Both of them were in very difficult situations. Both of them completely surrendered themselves to the Lord. And as a result, both of them were given full protection, full shelter of the Lord. And not only just for their immediate family, but for generations. The Lord made a promise to them, and boom, it was kept. So by doing this, Atmani Vedanam, by doing this surrender without reservations, we receive full grace and full protection of the Lord. And this is a great relief while we're traversing our way through this material world. Dukkhalayama Shashvatam, that's the material world. It's a temporary place. It's full of misery, full of suffering. I was listening to Prabhupada the other day, and he's saying on this one tape, he said, they do not know, they cannot be happy in this world. We know, but they do not know. They are thinking they will be happy by this thing, that thing, the other. But they cannot be happy. Because Dukkhalayama Shashvatam. This world's not meant for us being happy. This world is meant for us as a vehicle to get out of here and go back using our independence that brought us here to get us out of here. The Lord can just deliver everyone on his own. He doesn't, But because the living entity has that independence, it has to be our choice. We have to choose to surrender without reservation. Now, one thing I wanted to mention that I found very wonderful about the previous verse and purport and how it relates to this subject. As Prabhupada lists the parampara in the purport yesterday, he adds to it at the end his own name. He puts his own name on that list. So he's reading all the different personalities all the way down, and he gets to Srila Bhakti Siddhanta, and then he says, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami. He puts that in the purport. Now, this is not an act of bravado or ego. Yes, I'm the next in line. It's me, right here. No, but what it is in place is that he knows his place as a humble servant of the spiritual father. He understands that all of these personalities he's listed have been successful because they've received and taken the instruction in a back and forth from their predecessor, from their spiritual authority, and have been empowered by that instruction and by that acceptance of that instruction to be successful. Therefore, Prabhupada is quite competent and comfortable in adding his name to that list, knowing that he is empowered, duly selected, and as we might say, the bona fide son of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, and thus empowered to take that message of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu all over the world. That he's been blessed with the Priti Tubhyam, all blessings due to his Nirvalekena Arpitam, complete surrender without reservation. So the same mood is what we see there in Manu as he's receiving the blessings of Brahma. I just thought it was so amazing that Prabhupada could mention that like that, you know, and there was no hint of ego or arrogance or anything, just simply, okay, the line's continuing along, I'm that person carrying it. You know, Prabhupada would often be asked, and he would say, it is simply the mercy of my spiritual master. I am simply the servant of Siddhanta Saraswati, like that. So we can understand that by the Shastric example of Brahma and Manu, that Prabhupada's mood of full surrender brought the same blessings to him from Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. And Prabhupada encouraged us. He said the grandfather is more merciful than the father. We see this so much in our own community here, as we have two, three, sometimes four generations of families in our community. The grandfather is always very, very kind. You know, my my father was, he was always over the top at Christmas time. I mean, he would spend excessive amounts of money on all the kids. I have five siblings in my family, and then our own children. And my mother would always say to him, okay, this year we're going to spend less. And my father would always say, yes, dear. And he would spend the same thing. Christmas morning, there'd be like 6,000 wrapped packages and all, you know. Because the grandfather's always kinder to the grandchildren, you know. He wants to see that, let me give to them. I grew up without, but let me make sure that they don't go without. This is the mood of the grandfather. You know, sometimes, I mean, in my case, all of my grandchildren live somewhere between here and Timbuktu. You know, I never get to see them. So when I do get to see them and when an opportunity does arrive, I'm a bit generous. And sometimes my kids will say, you know, Dad, that's a little over the top. I'm like, look, if you lived here, I'd be doing this every single day. So, you know, I get once or twice a year to do it, birthdays or Christmas or whatever. So, you know, that kind of, you know, mood of giving that, you know, this is what Prabhupada refers to. That the grandfather, what to speak of on a spiritual level, Prabhupada, Bhaktisiddhanta, Gaur Kishordas Babaji, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, all the way back up, something like that. Now, from Prabhupada's own story, we know that he understood what is the disappointment of sons. In his own life, neither were his sons interested to take up the family business occupationally, nor spiritually to take up the family business. They showed no interest in either one. And we know this, Prabhupada had this personal storyline that included this. So therefore, when he finishes the purport with this sentence, the example of the father of mankind may be rigidly followed by mankind, and that will advance the cause of the relationship of fathers and sons, we can understand that there was a deeper meaning in his own life that he could reflect on in this regards. Certainly he understood the spiritual pretense being discussed in here, but he could also reflect, yes. And this is the importance of gaining personal realizations based on Shastra. Is personal realizations can sometimes, most times will, enhance our understanding of a philosophical point or a Shastric example. And when we read something, oh, okay, that's good. But then when we experience that and can reflect on that, oh, now I understand. So in this way, you know, this whole example here, very, very wonderful. Now, another point that I think we can understand from this verse is the phrase that Brahma uses to address his son Manu, my dear son. Now, this can be used in a number of ways. We've all had experience with this, those of us that are parents. Sometimes when the son does something foolish, we might express that and exasperate it. My dear son, like, what in the world are you doing? Or, you know, sometimes they do something that requires a bit more direction, something a little more pointed. My dear son, sit down and listen to me. You know, something like that, very specific, you know. But here, Brahma says that, and then he follows it with a very appreciative, kind, "My dear son, you are the Lord of the universe. This is all very flattering, very encouraging, very appreciative." So all three types of these moods are required in raising sons. But the last one, as Prabhupada mentions here, is most desirable by the father. Now, as Prabhupada says in the opening line of this purport, the relationship between father and son is always sublime. Now, I read that and I thought, okay. I mean, I can think of a couple of times where maybe it wasn't so sublime. But okay, always sublime. And the father is naturally disposed with goodwill towards the son and is always ready to help the son in his progress in life. Always ready to help the son in his progress in life. So this is the mood of giving. This is the mood of being a parent. Always, I have to sacrifice anything. Cut off my arm for my children, you know, like that. However, if we go back to this point of personal independence that Prabhupada mentions, we can reflect here again a realization in our own lives. Many of us from the 60s generation, I was in the grocery store yesterday, and the total of my bill came to 1968. And I piped up, I said, "Oh, that was a good year. I remember that well." And the kid, and I say kid behind the counter, said, "Oh, I wasn't born for 39 years after that." I said, "Thanks for making me feel old." At any rate, those of us from that 60s generation, we quite often rejected our father's good intention. We rejected our father's advice as we sought to distance ourselves from what we saw as a materialistic life and seek something that we thought to be more spiritual. The living being is spiritual by nature. But under that contact and that misuse and the bad association, as I mentioned, the influence of Maya can let us think we can be satisfied outside of that spiritual nature. So, you know, this was perceived by many of us as we were in that generation, as we distanced ourselves from our family traditions. I remember one particular scenario. I lived more or less a vagabond life, you know, hitchhiking here and there and just wearing whatever old, previously worn clothes I could get access to. Not in the sense of, you know, the different acharyas or goswamis picking up ragged clothes on the side of the road, not with that type of a spiritual vision, but just, you know, as a so-called mood of renunciation. And, you know, this, of course, the acharyas, when they speak about, you know, what is it, Sukadeva Goswami says, is there not cloth by the side of the road? You know, Gorkhasur Das Babaji would go and take some cloth from the burning fields where they would take the cloth off the body, you know, like that. And so this was a deep mood of renunciation of spiritual practices, you know. That wasn't the case in our youthful folly. I remember my parents one Christmas buying me a new winter coat. It was actually quite a nice coat. I remember the coat very distinctly. But I refused it. I rejected it. I said, no, I've got this old army coat. This is fine. I don't need anything new. Now, you know, this caused a lot of confusion and disappointment in my parents. It was an attempt by me to live a so-called simpler, higher thinking lifestyle. But at this point, I hadn't come into contact with Srila Prabhupada or his teachings. So all it was just a misplaced renunciation that didn't bring any happiness to my family members, you know. Now, Rupa Goswami has taught us Yukta Vairagya. That's our guiding principle, that we can use anything in the service of the Lord, I mean, within reason. So, you know, whatever you've got, you use it in the service of Krishna. Now, once I became a brahmachari, my parents, they would regularly, every Christmas, give me a new sweater, which I wore quite happily and accepted it and brought them great happiness. When I would go out to see them, you know, I would have that sweater on and my dhoti and shaved head and whatever, and they're very, very happy. Oh, he's wearing these, you know. And that's all it took to make them happy, just accepting that gift. They were giving something, but in that misguided rejection of that, it brought them unhappiness and didn't benefit me. But in accepting that, using that in service, then they became very happy and I. So anyway, this is a very simple way at which we can see a cooperative move between the fathers and sons being very beneficial. And so, yes, as Prabhupada finishes here, the father is 10 times more eager to instruct, to guide, and to provide for the son. So this kind of a mood of reciprocation, you know. And the successive verses here, we'll hear more about the appreciative glorification that Brahma has, along with suitable instructions he gives to Manu for his assistance in the mission. But we'll finish with that today. Thank you very much. If there's any questions, we'll very briefly take them. I've got another engagement after this. Yes, Trevor Crumper. Oh,
I.
Up, oh, you got the mic in your hand first, Steeta Damuni.
You got to pass through me first, man.
Put me on the spot, Steeta Damuni. Put me on the spot.
You asked for it. No. No, it's just a quick thing. You know, like Prabhupada, one you know, you talk about Prabhupada in the disciplic line. One practical reason he did it is he's accepted disciples and he's publishing these books. He's teaching. So he needs to establish himself for his reader and his disciples, you know, what line they're connected with. So,
very good,
you know,
point.
It's just a very, you know, there's some pragmatic aspects.
Yeah, so establishing his own name at the end of that gives credence to what he's already doing, that he's not just coming out of left field somewhere, but here I'm coming in a bona fide line. Very good point, thank you. Trivikram Prabhu.
Haribol, yeah. So the son had two very fundamental roles during the Varnashram.
I'm sorry, what was that?
I said the son had two fundamental roles during the Varnashram era, and that was to propagate the family lineage, bring glory and fame, mm-hmm. and the other one was to liberate the ancestors through the Pinda and the Strata ceremonies. Mm-hmm. That role was very, very important also, mm-hmm. you see, because that's why sometimes when people don't have children, like in the past, they're very disappointed, sons especially, mm-hmm. because that was the role given to them to, you know, to take the ancestors even from hell. And when the parents died, to do the Pinda and the Shraddha ceremony. Mm-hmm. And so forth.
Yeah. Prahlad Maharaj is the perfect example of that. Prabhupada mentions in the various purports. Ragatmukha is next. She's always got a question for us here. Prahlad Maharaj, Prabhupada mentions 7 generations, you know, just by his execution of devotional service. So it's a very good point, yeah. Mother Ragatmukha.
This is not at all philosophical, but it is a question of who was the president that encouraged you to call your parents on Mother's Day and Father's Day?
Well, my president at the time was Makanlal, later to be known as Bhakti Madhurya, and the temple commander was Mahamuni. Makanlal Prabhu, his sannyas name, he's passed away now, but Mahamuni is still with us, and they both had a cooperative understanding like that of, you know, working with the temple I grew up in was very much like a family unit. We were overseen, managed, and taken care of very much like a family, as I reflect back on it. I don't want to use the word horror stories, but the unpleasing stories we hear of how some temples are managed was not my experience. So when I did come across those, I was a little shocked. Oh, well, that's not the way it was where I was a brahmachari, you know, da, da, da. So yeah, we had a very nice environment there. Yeah. Yeah, that's a spiritual question. Yeah. All right, anybody else?
I just have a curious question.
Okay. You know what to say about curiosity, though.
Brahmaji didn't have a wife when Swayambhuva Manu and Satrupa appeared. Mm-hmm. Neither they appeared as a child. Previous classes, a few days back, it says that first man appeared with a mustache, and first lady appeared with a swollen breast. That's how Prabhupada put it. So that's the first man, and they did not have a childhood.
Hmm.
Where this parenting responsibility taught to them without getting trained by their own parents, was it predeposited that they are born with it? Or is it like...
A lot of the understandings in the earlier aspects of creation, Rida, came from the heart, were imparted in that way, were understood. The level of purity, the level of connection spiritually and practically was much greater, much better understood, and therefore a lot of that stuff was just natural and came about in that way. Now we have to be taught everything, you know? No, you can't leave your kids in the car in the middle of the summer with the windows up. You know, really? Somebody's going to be told that? You know, no, you can't let your kids run out in the middle of the street where there's traffic. Somebody's going to be told that? You know? So a lot of the parenting information we get now, yeah, has to be instructed, you know? But previous times, a lot of this was much more innately understood. Innately? Inertly? Internally understood, you know? So, I mean, that's how I would answer that. I don't know if that's...
No, it makes sense because I don't see or I never heard any pregnant mother goes to college to learn how to be mother or how to take care of the baby. Maybe she learned.
Although nowadays might not be a bad idea. I mean, we require a license to have a gun. You require a license to drive a car. You can just propagate children left, right, and other with no responsibility, training, or knowledge at all. You know, so, I mean, maybe we need to redo that system. Anyway, all right, thank you very much. All glories to Srimad Bhagavatam, all glories to Srila Prabhupada, all glories to the Vaishnavas.